I think we're recording. Okay. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another amazing episode of the Weeb Weekly. I am joined by two amazing, beautiful co-hosts. We are ready to come back with the vengeance because there's a lot of anime content that we have to get through. And I wanted to say hello to my friends first before we get started. Mizu, how are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. I'm pumped.
Yeah. Ooh, I like the energy. I like the energy. And I see Travis going with that Coca-Cola right now.
I see. It's water. It's water. Yes, water. I love the energy too, man. I'm sorry, what'd you say?
How you doing?
Oh, man. My guy, I'm doing good. I'm with my friends. I'm having fun. I'm excited for this.
Love to see it. Love to see it. Well, as you know, we've been in a little bit of a break. And a lot of news has come forth. With a lot of your favorite animes getting a lot of news, leaks, and a ton of exciting prospects moving forward. The first one that we have to cover, obviously, is the one that has been taking Twitter by storm, which I did not expect that it was going to do that wild. Hunter x Hunter is coming back. So how do we feel about that?
I never thought that I would say. Here's the thing. I feel so embarrassed because I was one of those people, I will admit, that made jokes about Hunter x Hunter never coming back. I made them religiously. Like, oh, yeah. I was like, oh, Hunter x Hunter fans, you guys, give up hope. Like, y'all, what are y'all doing? Stop it. Like, it's over. Like, like Kenobi is like, yeah, we're done. We lost. But now, when I heard it was coming back, I was like, there's ain't no way. And I was like, wow, they're really coming back. Holy crap, it's actually happening. But overall, I mean, I'm still a Hunter x Hunter fan, so I'm excited for sure.
I feel that. Travis.
It's a mix, man. It's a mix. And here's why, right? Because first of all, I'm a huge Hunter x Hunter fan. I love the series. I love it. And like I do in my free time, I sometimes just read the interviews of these creators. But in this case, Togashi, who is actually the creator of Hunter x Hunter, he has author's notes that he releases from time to time. And the reason why we've been having hiatuses is because of his chronic back pain that's been so debilitating that it's rendered him bedridden to the point where he can't even use the bathroom. And with Hunter x Hunter, there's even a time where even in an interview, he acknowledged that the series could have ended there. And technically, even he considered that the series ended in this particular spot. But he said that as a reader, not just a creator, but as a reader, he's like, there's so many more places Hunter x Hunter could go. So despite his back pain, despite the fact that it technically could have ended, he has such a passion for it that he wants to come back and write more. And I'm excited about it, but man, that's... I feel for him. I feel for him going through this pain for the story. I love it, but it's at the same time, it's brutal.
I feel that as somebody that goes that like has dealt with a lot of back pain and stuff like that, I can tell you that is horrendous. Having to do stuff when your back is just like aching, you're like, ah, what is happening right now? I just want to go to sleep. It is ridiculous. And the fact that he has to, because I'm at least from what he's been tweeting, he's putting out like a lot, at least so far. I don't know if he's labeling it by chapter or labeling it by panel or anything like that. But I think he started with just like the number 4. And by the 5th or 7th picture on Twitter that went ultra mega viral of him like posting the panel drafts that he was making, he was already by like 25 or 26. And I'm like, what? What is happening? He's being prolific.
His work ethic is nuts. It's nuts.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and it says a lot that I think he's one of the few, actually manga, who has two, like, both successful series, because some people tend to forget that he's also the creator of my number one of my favorite anime, Yu Yu Hakusho. And I'm just like, dude, that's the same guy? That's the same man? I was like, holy crap, that's insane. And you can even, he even makes little references in Hunter x Hunter to Yu Yu Hakusho in it. So, and the fact that he did that, and then he also decided to do this, just that alone. I mean, he's already absolute GOAT status. And married the woman who made Sailor Moon? Golly, like... Like he won the manga award. I don't know, whatever.
It's a lottery, bro.
He did it. You won already. I don't know what else you got to do. But yeah, I love how he's bringing this to light, because a lot of people don't talk about how, you know, just like doing anything you're doing in life, especially when it comes to writing, even mangaka, like it can take a toll on you. They can take a toll on you. It can mess with you. Like, for example, one of the ones I've heard that Kishimoto, the creator of Naruto, he talked about how he never had a honeymoon because he started writing the series around he got married, and he never had a honeymoon until it was done. And he got married in like in the 90s, and he didn't have his honeymoon until like 2016.
Oh my God. What?
He postponed his honeymoon for the series.
Oh so, my God, that's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And the story is just like that. And of course, you know, a big part of it with like health, it does matter. And we can see it can affect you, unfortunately, with, you know, with the creator Berserk, Mira. And he's been writing his series since 1989. Berserk has been around since 1989. And as you can see, unfortunately, he passed away. And it was part of it had to, granted, it was already stuff that was already with him, but a part of it had to do with the workload he put on himself, which it also explains, you know, the hiatuses that he took. And unfortunately, yeah, he passed away. So it's just like, I like how, I hate it's like this, but I'm happy that it's bringing to light that, hey guys, like, I know that we love the series so much. I know we want to be like, oh, where is that? I need my chapter yesterday. But you got to understand, like, this is all, mind you, I think the thing that's also crazy about mangaka compared to, you know, writing a comic like from DC or Marvel, stuff like that, is that there's multiple parts in it. Granted, you can still say with manga too, but most of that comes from one person when it comes to manga. They're the ones writing it. They're the ones drawing it. Especially if you do it weekly, like for example, with, I'm surprised we haven't heard anything about Oda, the creator of One Piece, by now. Like, ever since this stuff came to light, I'm just like, I wonder what's going on with Oda. If there's anything he's not telling us that he's like, oh yeah, I actually get migraines half the time when I do the stuff. Like, granted, he hasn't said anything out publicly, but I won't be surprised if he came out and told us something.
He's got to be going through it. I mean, the guy's been doing it for, I mean, we're talking like around 30 years. And with that kind of rigorous mangaka schedule, there has to be something there.
Yeah, he says that he even said it in one interview that he spends one day on the plot and the rest of the day is drawing.
Insane.
Yep.
No, I don't know. And that's why I feel mixed about these new things coming out, like Hunter x Hunter, Berserk. I mean, I'm happy, but at the same time, it's like, especially with the Berserk news. The Berserk news, I'm very on the fence about, and I really wanted to like talk to you. I was really excited about the pod for this one, because my question is, where's the line, right? Like, when an artist dies, where's the line with what we do with the work that they've left behind? Like, for example, Marvel is planning on putting a CGI version of Stan Lee in future movies, right?
Yep.
And that's really weird. It's you could argue that it's a love letter to Stan Lee. Like, he always loved doing that, and to keep him in it is just to say, wow, we still appreciate him. But at the other token, you could also be like, this is just another way to wring out dollars out of like someone who's not even here anymore. Like, we're still going to use your image, your likeness, whatever, in order to get money. And when it comes to Berserk, Mura unfortunately passed, and the team that they have around it, right? I know that Mitsu talked about this, where it's going to be someone who's spoken to him many times. The team actually released a letter to the public saying that a lot of the ideas that Mura was like throwing around, that's what they're going to use for the future of where Berserk is going to go. But at the end of the day, at the core, this isn't entirely Mura anymore. And as Mitu was saying, mangaka, it's a unique thing where it all comes from you. Usually, like the story, the art, all of it comes from you. So we're switching hands, and we're switching hands in a way we're saying like, oh, it's still him. I feel weird about it. It's not like he left a note somewhere saying like, please do this if anything happens to me. It's more of like, oh, we had like some talks with him. You know, we kind of get a feel about what he was really going for. So we'll just kind of, you know, we got to pump it out. Berserk is popular. It I don't know. How do you guys feel about it?
Honestly, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up because I'm definitely in the same camp when it comes to like, you know, creator stuff, even after they passed, especially if they didn't leave anything behind indicating that. Especially with that Stan Lee thing, that's crazy. I think it'll be a better way to maybe just use little references like, oh, name something after Stan Lee. Oh, this hotel's numbers is Stan Lee's birthday, stuff like that. Like, don't actually bring a CGI version of Stan Lee. Or, and plus, you know, give the public what we want. We want Deadpool. That was the plan. That was the idea. Deadpool be the one doing it if you're going to do the cameos thing. But anyway, with that, now here's the thing. I will say this. With Berserk, I initially thought that until I read the interviews of the person taking over for him, his friend. And mind you, this is not just some guy who just worked for him from time to time. This is his childhood best friend. Like, they've known each other since they were 15 years old. Wow. They even shared dorms. Like he actually even made a little mangaka short talking about how he felt about Mira's passing and how it affected on him. And he basically talked about how they used to dorm together and you talk to me all the time. And like, he knew him so well to the point where he even drew him. Like, every time he's talking, he has his finger up, and he even puts a little note saying, oh, when Mira has his finger up, he's very excited about the thing he's talking about. And he said, if anybody who always blurted and tell me everything about he's planning on doing Berserk, it was always me. He told me about it to the point where he said, I pretty much knew the entire plot of Berserk from beginning to end. And one thing I did not know, he said that what solidified how he got involved with the project of Berserk is that when they were like working or had dorms together, Mira came up to him because he's also a mangaka as well. Mira came up to him and was just like, hey, can you help me with this scene? And it was the eclipse scene. And first of all, this also shows how an OG friend he is, because any average person, you see that scene, you're just like, dude, what are you on? What is going on with you? Do you need help? Like, I'm switching dorms today. But he was just like, oh, I get it. I get what you're trying to do. I'm going to help you draw. So he had a hand in the eclipse scene and some scenes like that. So, and then, of course, people brought up his assistants. There are people that Mira has been training, because most of his recent works, some of it was actually not even him just drawing. Like, there were other, yeah, like, I think two or four assistants were the ones who have been drawing for him that were understanding and how he draws and stuff like that. So the part I like about it that gives me a little bit of faith with this one is that it wasn't a just cash grab, like, oh, yeah, we're just going to do this. It was with somebody who understands. Now, if they got somebody who, like you say, who just happened to work with him and was just like, oh, yeah, I kind of get it. Whatever, we're going to do this right here. Like, no, this is someone who knew him all his life to the point where he was just like, I feel... And in his mangaka, he said, I feel somewhat responsible because, like, and he said, he's been telling me the story ever since we were kids. And I just felt like it'll be messed up if it wasn't finished. He's like, dude, he's like, in the interview, he's like, dude, you really gonna not finish it for me after I literally, like, blown your ear off about it? Wow. So I'm gonna do that for him. He said, I see that more for him. I'm not doing this for the money. I'm just doing it because I love him. He is my brother. Wow. And I'm going to do that for him. And he even warned us too. He says, like, hey, I will say though, like, I'm not Mira. I am not 100% him. And I don't know every single detail that he planned out, but I will do the best of my ability to do that. And that to me, I was just like, I like the honesty. I liked how he was being honest with us. And so, but I completely understand, like, people like you and others who are just like, you know what? Like, now Mira has passed. my journey with Berserk stops there after his with Mirror himself. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's no people like there's nothing wrong with stopping there. But at least for me personally, I'm going to continue on with it. And because of that interview and the way they were talking about it, I have faith in it for now. And then maybe who knows what happens, but I have faith in it.
Jose, how are you feeling, man?
I just after hearing all of that, I think the best possible parallel that I can equate it to is what happened in Game of Thrones. So George R. R. Martin, as we know, is getting up there in terms of age. And while he's been working on other projects, there were parts of Game of Thrones where some of his writings were off schedule based on what he was planning on writing for Dance with Dragons. So he already at a certain point in the series, some of the books hadn't been written yet. So it was, I think it was Dance with Dragons or one of the ancillary books that had some effect on the overall story for the HBO show weren't completely finished. And what he did is that he told the overall story or like the scope of what he thought the story should end in to D.B. Weiss and Dave Benioff. So he told them, this is where I think the story could go or should go, right? This is where I envision the story going, which is not exactly what his friend told the public, because obviously Mira didn't leave a full note saying, hey, this is where I think Berserk should go, right? But that's where I think creative freedom can kind of be explored a little bit, as long as it's not like a complete desecration of the overall tone, the vibe, and be like, this is completely different to what Mira would have written or drawn himself. I think it'll be a fun way to freshen up a story that has a raging fan base. I've seen so many like Berserk fans be like, yo, if Berserk had like a proper ending, or like a proper continuation towards like an ending that made did justice to what has happened before, it would absolutely tear up the pop culture genre in terms of the impact that anime could have on pop culture because of the impact that Berserk has had on the anime community. So I would be on the side of positivity in this case, right? Because we are getting somebody that's very close to the source material, and I think when somebody creates something with love for the source material, it shows, as contrasted with projects that we all know exactly what they are that were made for the money and not for like love for the original work. That makes sense.
And actually, I was going to bring up the fact that another example of like a continuation of a story that the Disney brothers, Walt Disney and Roy, is it Roy?
Roy Disney.
So, you know, Walt Disney died in the 1960s, Walt Disney passed away. And of course, you know, everybody and the mother up to a point was scrambling like, yo, the man himself passed away. Like, what are we doing? What's the state of Disney in itself? And his brother was there, Roy Disney. And Roy Disney took over for a good majority of every project after that was the product of Roy Disney.
Yep.
Whoa.
So, and living on with his brother's legacy going forward. So that's why I look at it. As long as, like how like Jose said, as long as they're being true to the source material, as long as it's like they're being genuine, like, hey, we really love this story, and we want to continue it, at least end it on a good note. And I'm down for that, because yeah, there are some that are definitely cash grabs. You can tell from like out the gate, like a certain one that we're going to be potentially talking about. At least in my opinion, is kind of a cash grab. But yeah.
Talk to him, Mizu. Let him know what you feel.
Yeah, man. So, what's this cash grab you're talking about?
The one that, even though I'm still looking forward to it a little bit, but it is clear a cash grab about it. But at the same time, I'm not surprised by it because the creator is not against it, because he's smarter with it. And that is, you know, the live action One Piece we're getting.
Yep.
Wow.
So, but here's the thing, though. Here's the thing, though. The thing about it with Oda is that he knows what he's doing. It's not like others were like, oh, what are you doing with the stuff? We're going to squeeze out all the money out of it. Oda knows what he's doing. They say, oh, yeah, let's keep making these One Piece movies. I mean, it's cool because it's just a contained story. And it doesn't matter to me because it's not canon to my original stuff. So if people want to see a One Piece movie centered around just a little story outside the source material, that's fine. And look, money in the pocket. It works for me. And that's why you never notice that he never really, if he turns it down, that speaks volumes. So like, okay, hey, can we do a One Piece movie? Sure. What do you got in mind? Oh, we want to do this, that, and the third. We're going to do something involving magic. Okay. I'll just write the general senses of it, and there you go. And plus it speaks volumes because Oda is behind this as well, the live action. He was there in the auditioning process. He saw the people. So those people were handpicked by Oda himself. So Oda's behind this. It's not like he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do that. He's in support of it. They even got signed T-shirts. They even got signed T-shirts from him.
That's crazy. When I hear that, he's behind it, he has creative control and all that, I'm still worried because Netflix... Netflix has a terrible track record with this, and they did the same thing to the creators of Avatar: The Last Airbender, where they worked with them, promised creative control for 2 years for their live action, and then after 2 years, the creators ended up walking away. Brian DiMartino and Ryan Konietzko, they even released statements saying that, hey, listen, we're not saying this is going to be bad, but whatever is on screen is not what Brian and I intended or envisioned to make. That's like the direct quote. And I'm like, for Netflix to do that to the creators of Avatar, which at the time, like, they released the entirety of Avatar: The Last Airbender
and Legend of Korra.
Yeah. It was trending number one. So they did that to the creators of the show that was trending number one on their platform. Totally was like, we're not going to listen to your artistic vision. I'm like, no one's off limits then. I don't think Oda, as much as he's treasured, I could easily see Netflix being like, just being like, Oda, we kind of want to go a different direction with Luffy. We want to call him Luffy. We really want him to be vegetarian. We want to put like broccoli in his hand, for whatever
reason. Oh, my heart.
So I'm scared, but the visuals look great. Like, the sets look beautiful, but I'm like, I want to see what level of CGI they do, right? Like, I know they're shelling out for millions, but I don't know.
No, here's the thing, and I'm glad you back to my original point. Though I said that, I still think it's a cash grab. No, at the end of the day, because especially what you said about the Avatar, like, that to me blows my mind that the creators of the series left their own series. The people who thought the whole process in their minds left, and then y'all, not only did y'all not listen, and y'all are still doing it even after they left, which is insane. Like, that to me speaks volumes of, to me at least, Netflix's character. Like, wow, you're gonna just do that to the creators nonetheless. Like, I'll maybe get that if it was like a if you're playing telephone or something, but no, yeah, the whole creators were on it, and you still said, now we're gonna have a different direction on this. But that's why I say that, though I'm a little excited, I know that this is somewhat of a cash grab, and I'm still hesitant because, as well, yeah, Netflix doesn't have a great history when it comes to just anime live actions. Like, the only one I can think of that was relatively good was what was called Ryokenshin. That was the only one I heard positive stuff about.
Wow, interesting.
That was the only one I heard relatively positive stuff about. But every other one, they did one for Fullmetal Alchemist.
Death Note was
one of the worst ones. I will say that some people would say Cowboy Bebop was okay, but I would say it was a lot better, especially visually, and at least they tried to stay with the source material. Unlike Death Note, just went a totally different direction on what was going on. The only highlight to that was that they got Willem Dafoe to play
for you.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe, that was the highlight of it. Okay, they got Willem Dafoe. Willem Dafoe said yes to this. Absolutely wonderful. Wonderful. But yeah, it looks like going off of that, they seem dedicated to it. And the fact that they're dedicating whole, like, actually building sets and stuff like that, which is interesting. And it looks pretty cool. But of course, you know, like Travis said, they're not asking the big questions, especially the one question I have. What is Luffy's Gomu Gomu no Mi going to look like in this show, in this live action? How are you going to show his stretchy abilities in a live action thing? Because I don't know how that's going to look. And that's why I was also looking forward to, like, kind of connected with Multiverse of Madness, because certain things happen in there. And I'm just like, could that translate? Can this translate? I hope this translates. But yeah, I want to see how they're going to do that. And the one thing he said in the clip was that, oh yeah, we're trying to set up to do the set for Arlong Park. And I'm like, Arlong Park? So that means Arlong is going to be in this, which begs the question, what are the fishmen going to look like in this?
Ooh.
Because I'll put up a clip or something if you guys are going to be watching this in the future. What the fishmen look like? I want to see what a live action fishman is going to look like. And for those who are not known to One Piece, in One Piece there are different creatures and different races that exist in there, and one of them are called fishmen, who are basically these fish humanoids. They're people who live, like, they have fish-like attributes and looks and stuff like that, ranging from you know, mermaids and stuff like that. And one of the main bad guys that looks like what they're going to be doing for the live action is Arlong, who is associated with the character Nami, because he was pretty much like her boss. And he's this like he's a tiger shark. It's like he's this tiger shark dude who wears sandals in this like Hawaiian shirt. He has this long sharp nose and sharp teeth and all this stuff. He's like blue skin. So I'm just trying to see you after. And if, for those who are wondering after hearing that description, yeah, that sounds crazy. Yeah, I'm in that same boat. What is that going to look like live action?
I would get the animators that did Pirates of the Caribbean Dead Man's Chest on that, because that whole crew was CGI in 2007, and that looked beautiful. The key, I would say the key to that is to keep it as low lit as possible, because I know a lot of the action in One Piece, or at least from what I've seen in the first like 20 episodes, takes place in daylight. But like, if you shoot it at night, there's less issues with texturing and stuff like that. So that's where I would say it would succeed, if you get people that are used to making those sort of CGI things come to life. Does that make sense?
No, that makes perfect sense.
I'm so happy that you brought that up, because I was thinking that to the side, like as a counter argument to myself, like, well, if they take the Pirates of the Caribbean route and did that kind of CGI with the David Jones' crew, then I can see that working. Granted, they're gonna have to maybe make it less, you know, graphic, because the Dead Man crew, they look so hyper realistic.
Yeah,
crazy. It was wonderful, but like you could feel like the sea salt off of them and everything. But
yeah, I kind of do want that. I want them, that team, and also whoever did Love, Death, and Robots, the latest season.
Oh, yes, yes.
That, like, especially on that first episode, if you get people who did that CGI, all right.
Yes. I think the team that worked on Snow in the Desert would literally make that One Piece, that part of One Piece, that CGI requirement to get on that level, I think it would be pristine. Because there were some aspects of Love, Death, and Robots that make you feel like, oh, I'm looking at a real person. Like, that person's actually there acting. But it's all computer generated. So as long as it doesn't get into like the uncanny valley territory where you're like, oh, this definitely looks really weird, it'll definitely be a success.
Hopefully. And it's just like, to this day, it's like, what is up with them? Granted, I get that they're very popular. One Piece is popular. Naruto is popular. But like the concept of trying to make these live action, it's just like, I don't know. It's like, yeah, they're very popular, but I never thought in my life that I would hear the words One Piece live action ever. Because I'm just like, especially with One Piece, because, you know, One Piece has a unique art style, and they I wouldn't say 100%, but like they're willing to be a little bit more cartoony. Like their animation style, they're willing to be a little bit more, I would say, wacky while still being serious. But I never thought they would make a live action of it. Now I'm just like, yo, how are you going to do that? How are you going to translate that into live action? That, the wackiness, all that stuff. Like, how is that going to work? And I think the only way you can do that, especially with films like that or shows like that, is, apologies, to not take it, like, if they don't take themselves too seriously. Like, usually anime or shows, stuff like that, that don't take themselves too seriously tend to do relatively well enough because, like, oh, yeah, we know it's a joke. We know what we look like. It's all part of the gag. And, like, okay, I appreciate that because it softens the blow of me being, like, you know, very critical on it compared to ones that try to act up and then be serious at the same time. Like, okay, I can't take you seriously. I can't. It's not working.
Dragon Ball Evolution.
Exactly. Like, Dragon Ball Evolution. Dragon Ball Evolution took itself way too seriously, and it was terrible.
And it was just wrong, too. Like,
completely wrong.
Yeah, like, the director didn't even watch Dragon. That's so...
Bro, we could make a whole-ass episode just talking about, like, people that made shows based off source material that they did not even see or read. I'm like... Why are you excited to take on this project if you don't even know what it is, bro?
Exactly. That's very weird. It's even as like, granted, I'm not in the director writing sphere like that, but even then, it's still weird. And plus, you're not making any efforts to actually check it out. Like, well, I don't know anything about Twilight, so I might as well read the book. But if you're not like, I think I get it, and then just go on like, okay, roll the clip. Let's keep it action. Like, dude, come on now. You gotta at least try.
Imagine that they make they turn the devil fruits in like the completely opposite direction, and they give you like metal powers or something like that instead of like.
So that's the other thing that I'm worried about is like how faithful are they going to be to the source material? Now I'm not expecting because of adaptations, of course. I'm not expecting full accuracy because, of course, like, you know, they're going to have some parts they're going to change here or there. It's common through all adaptations of whatever, of anything. But I am worried about what they're going to do. Like, and I hope they aren't drastic enough to be like, oh, yeah, we're changing the whole concept of Devil Fruits. This time, like, if I see Luffy swimming, I'm going to lose my mind. I'm going to lose my mind. I'm like, what? Hold on. Absolutely not. Or funny enough, even though I wish, in a funny way, I wish he did have this, but Usopp is using actual guns instead of his slingshot, even though, like, granted, it's more better for him, in my personal opinion. But if he starts off with pistols and stuff like that, I'm like, hey, whoa, hey, no, no, sir. Don't where's the slingshot at? But yeah, as long as they stay relatively close to the source material, I have no problems. It also just depends on what they're going to change. And of course, like, people are already getting riled up right now about the casting right now, which is, let's be honest, kind of rooted in racism, because Usopp is being played by a black actor, and we just recently found out the person who's playing Nami's sister is a black actress.
Oh, really?
And people are riled up for it, and I feel like if you're riled up, I feel like you don't understand One Piece. And here's the reason why. It's because people are like, oh, but that's Nami's sister. Like, she looks nothing like her and stuff like that. Well, if you paid attention, Nami and her sister, they're not related.
Exactly.
They're not related. They're both adopted. Like, they are just babies that their adopted mother happened to find in a battlefield or after a battle and decided to take care of them. But yeah. Nami and her sister are not related at all. So to me, it makes sense. So yeah, I expect that. So, but you know, people are, you know, complaining and, you know, making the weak arguments of wokeness, forced diversity, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah.
I saw the same type of energy as soon as Iñaki Godoy was announced as Luffy. And I was like, why are we doing this before the dude has even opened his mouth? Like,
exactly. And the part that people also forget that Oda even did an interview. And the one thing I also like about Oda is that, like, kind of like he said with the creator of JoJo, he loves doing interviews, and he's one of those people who is willing to answer all your questions, even the ones that are obscure. He answers them. Like, oh, what if Zoro had a devil fruit? He would tell you, like, oh yeah, if Zoro had a devil fruit, this is what it'd be. And he was asked a question, if the Straw Hats were from an actual country or from countries, where would they be from? And he said that Luffy would be from Latin America, specifically Brazil.
Yeah.
So Luffy would pretty much be Latinx. And he said that Nami would be from Sweden. Sanji obviously would be from France, because he literally half his freaking moves are named after French stuff. Frankie's American. Usopp is South African. So, and so on and so forth. The one that was a little surprised with was Nico Robin. Nico Robin, apparently, he said, would be from Russia. So I kind of see it, but I was just like, huh, interesting.
I see that. I see Nico Robin is
from Canada. If that wasn't obvious enough. But yeah. But yeah, he said that. So when people were upset about the casting of Luffy, I'm like, he looks like Luffy. I mean, in a realistic, if he was a live action way, like, yeah, this is what I picture Luffy would look like. But yeah, it's just crazy. Like, and plus they haven't even acted yet. You haven't even seen them do anything yet. Exactly. So like I get understanding, like critiquing, okay, I don't know much about this person. I get that, but like they haven't done anything yet, so let's save the judgment until we see it.
Yeah. And speaking of saving that judgment, I saw a lot of conversation online regarding another live action adaptation that was just announced. Sony officially has acquired the rights to make a One Punch Man movie. They are getting the director of the famous the Fast and Furious franchise, Justin Lin, is going to be directing the film. So he left the Fast 10, Fast 11, whatever they're on right now. He left that project, and as soon as he left it, he was confirmed as the director for the One Punch Man movie. Huh. So what people don't usually remember is that besides doing the Fast and Furious franchise, Justin Lin has a history with horror movies as well. So like he's experienced with all different types of genres, and he is a fan of One Punch Man. So I don't necessarily want to like people to just say, oh shit, Sony's making a One Punch Man movie, it's going to suck because Sony sucks. Like, people take that avenue as soon as something is announced without even giving it a shadow of a chance. I would say, what did you guys think as soon as you heard this news?
Not gonna lie, after you said that, it makes sense that he's the director of One Punch Man, because if you watch One Punch Man and the way they are, like the way it is and the how it's written, the comedy and the action and stuff like that, I can see him like doing that. He worked on Fast and Furious, and he said he does horror, because there are some very interesting looking monsters and creatures that Saitama fights. And you know, and the action gets crazy and just out of nowhere, over the top, which is fitting when you said he's worked on Fast and Furious, because, you know, it went from being a regular car racing show, a car racing franchise, to now they're doing crazy stunts and stuff like that. So yeah, this checks out to me. I can see that being done. And like I said earlier, there are a lot of anime that I feel like can't be done live action. Like, it's just it won't work. I will say One Punch Man is one of those gray areas that it can work. It all depends on the direction that you go, because let's be honest, like Saitama and One Punch Man, they pretty much go off a superhero culture in a way. And it will pretty much be like a superhero film. And we've gotten a bunch of superhero films before. So I would say you can put One Punch Man in that kind of camp of being a over-the-top superhero film. And I can see them going with a better, I'm going to remember that word before you guys get shocked for this. I can see it being a better version, if done well, of Man of Steel. Because think about it. We wanted to see Superman and do, you know, his feats, so, you know, that whole fight with General Zod and stuff like that. He's fighting against skyscrapers. He's flying through the air and doing all these crazy feats while he's defeating and fighting Zod. Now, can you picture that with One Punch Man? Or even then, he's not that over the top. Like, he just stands there and you can just animate, like, you know, him doing his punches, and I think it'll be, I don't know why, I just think it can be doable. So at least that's just me. So I'm kind of excited for it.
I'm on the fence, and you made some great points. You did. And you know, maybe I'm just the negative out of the bunch, maybe. And I'm trying not to be. I feel like when it comes to One Punch Man, it's gonna be a similar thing with One Piece, where it's gonna come down to a lot of CGI. There's gonna be a lot of CGI in it. The monsters are going to be 100% computerized. Images, and they are massive. Like, a lot of them are really massive, and you're gonna have to show them blowing up on like super large scales. Like, there's a whole part where Saitama, you know, destroys a meteor, and then like that meteor destroys the city. Like, it's there's so much going on
from the moon to the earth. Like, all that stuff is
massive. It's going to be super CGI, and I'm just like, I need to see what you're doing. If it's not even more about the director, it's about how much you're willing to spend on the CGI. Because if it's going to be a lot, and we're going to get some Love, Death, Robots level, Pirates of the Caribbean level CGI, I'm here for it. I'm here to give the entire genre a try of anime live action. But until we know how willing they are to make this look real and good, I'm going to be skeptical. Borderline negative.
Yeah, I don't want to see no, like, Power Rangers style, like, superhero landings where it's just, like, the frame rate just drops drastically, or, like, you can barely see the silhouette. Like, I if you're going all out, I expect to see, like, some level of quality to it because, I mean, consider this. I'm just shocked because, like, everybody knows that one of the biggest movies of the year is going to be Everything Everywhere All at Once, and that thing blends a ton of different animation styles, CGI effects, and it had a $25 million budget. Like, that thing made $25 million feel like Interstellar, and it baffles me how throwing these large sums of money can yield so lackluster results for some projects, right? Some projects feel like they're super rushed, that the CGI was not complete, or maybe they cut corners to try to make a deadline for XYZ reason. I would say I would rather them take the, speaking with Sony actually, I would rather them take the God of War approach, where if you have to delay it, you delay it. But as long as the project is complete, you deliver a completed project, right? That's what we're all trying to go for. Because that's what we always hear complaints for, is that, like, oh, the fandom is way too rabid. The demand is way too high. So you have to release it now in order to, like, appease your fans and try to, like, you know, give them what they asked for. And then you release it and it's lackluster, or it looks choppy. And then you complain that, oh, it's just the fans that they just don't like anything. Right. If they complain, if it's good, they complain if it's bad. I would say it's the opposite. If you take your time and you, let's say you show snippets of like a really cool action scene and you're like, oh, stay tuned for next year. Like, it's coming next year. That'll get people hyped a lot more than just giving us a trailer where it's just like, ugh, the CGI looks incomplete. And then you just have to fix it in post. That makes sense?
Yeah, definitely.
I feel like Sonic Frontiers kind of ran into that situation. I don't know if you guys follow like the game, but there's been Sonic Frontiers is like Sonic as a franchise, gaming franchise, has just been extremely controversial. And the fandom is real. People have pretty much no faith in the company to actually produce a good Sonic game. But for the last 5 years, they've been working on Sonic Frontiers. And what they did was they had a really bad rollout. And I wish they did what you were talking about, Jose, where they were just like, hey, this is gonna, they show a good clip, this is coming out this. What they did was they showed like something that looked really rough. And after waiting for 5 years, it was like, What are you doing? If you just waited, if you just made it more delayed, if you really just had a refined product and then really, we'd be fine with it. But yeah, I just hope moving forward, a lot more studios when they're coming to their properties, they just take that approach. We'll be fine waiting. Like, what we want is a good story that looks good. So just do that. Just do it, whatever it takes.
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes back to what I said before, especially with One Punch Man. You know, One Punch Man is already funny. Like, he's sarcastic. So it's like, you know, make it fun. Like, if you don't take yourself, again, don't take yourself seriously, it can work as well. Because I can see it being done, especially if they take more of it, maybe like Scott Pilgrim versus the World kind of thing, where it's like very very up there, animated and everything. And plus, you know, Saitama is a very funny guy. And especially when he's very, like, stoic in the stuff that happens to him. But yeah, I think I'm optimistic. I think it could be done. It's just like how you said, if they're willing to put in the budget, they're willing to put in the time, I think it could work. And we can see that being up there as, who knows, maybe knock on wood, it could be up there with other superhero films. Like, oh yeah, there we saw the new project Black Adam was cool, but did you see that One Punch Man movie?
Oh, how do you guys feel about Black Adam?
It looks amazing. It looks amazing. I was skeptical. I was very skeptical, but it looks good. I love how they're like really like not shying away from the fact that like Black Adam is not a hero. He's an anti-hero in the biggest sense of the word. He's there to provide justice, but it's his brand of justice. Like, and if you don't like it, you can these nuts. That's what he says. And so I feel like they chose the right person to play the like Black Adam, because A, Black Adam has to be menacing enough to go against Superman and Shazam at the same time. And I feel like The Rock has that gravitas where he can toe the line between hero and villain because he did it so much in the WWE. Like, he's towed that line between like a likable villain for so long that even if they frame Black Adam as a disgruntled hero or like, oh well, it looks like I have to do the right thing, it'll be in a brutal way, and the thing is, it'll fit the mold of Black Adam as a character and the person playing him, and that's the type of synergy that you're looking for, right? So for example, that what we think of Superman, Henry Cavill is there, but like, you think of Christopher Reeve. Like, Christopher Reeve is synonymous with Superman, at least when it comes to like the image of him in live action. I think having somebody as The Rock who can carry franchises, even if it's commercially and not necessarily like super great critically, he can carry a franchise and he can carry a lot of weight when it comes to creative decisions that make sense. So I would say that if he's on board to try to make him as not necessarily comic book accurate, but as believable as possible in a DC in the context of DC, because he did say that he wanted to expand. He was all on board, all in on expanding the DC universe. That's what he said. Like, he's all on board. He's all in on Black Adam. So
no.
If you're able to make him a mainstay character, that's a solid villain / hero to introduce into DC's lineup. I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful.
Wow.
I'm not gonna lie, I can't wait to see what he's gonna do, because he's gonna be fighting the Justice Society.
Yeah.
So, which is a precursor to the Justice League. And I don't know why this is giving me Suicide Squad, as in, I think the most of them are probably gonna die.
Yeah.
Because the thing about it, they picked Dr. Fate, and here's the thing with Dr. Fate, it's all the helmet. Not to say it's not important, but the wielder of the helmet is not necessarily important as long as the helmet is there. So I can see him dying. Whoever's playing Dr. Fate, he's dead. Who was it? Twister? What's her name? Whirlwind?
It's somebody. Whirlwind, Atom Smasher, Hawkman, and Dr. Fate, I think, are the big Justice Society members.
Now let's be honest with ourselves. Can we see them in future DC projects? Maybe Dr. Fate.
Pierce Brosnan's Dr. Fate can definitely make it through.
Yeah,
but I don't that. think I don't think Hawkman is surviving the full runtime of the film. I highly doubt it.
I'm not gonna lie. I can't really see any of them coming back. And here's the thing, even with Dr. Fate, because it goes back to my whole point that it's the helmet. So I can see his character dying off, and then maybe in the future, someone takes up the mantle of Dr. Fate and puts on the helmet. But I would do want him to stay if he can. But I don't know. I'm just giving us the Suicide Squad vibes where, you know, they tricked us in the beginning half and like, oh, this is the group. And it turns out they're not the group. At least with this, we're going to see The Rock's Black Adam just go to town on these characters. Because it's nobody we, like, and then in the battle, these are still iconic characters, but it's like nobody we are super connected with. It's not like that he's fighting Cyborg. It's not like he's fighting Flash or
Green Lantern.
So it's going to be, I don't know, I'm getting weird vibes that they're going to die.
Fair. I'm a fan of The Rock, and I want The Rock so badly to have his John Cena moment. I remember before John Cena was in Suicide Squad, people were kind of like, they didn't think of him as a good actor because he was in a slew of like terrible movies. And then, you know, when the news broke, there was kind of a mix on it. They were like, oh God, Peacemaker? And then we saw it and it was like, yes, you are good.
Peacemaker show was elite.
The Peacemaker show was elite. He's so good in that role. It was perfect for him. And he really shines. And I want that for The Rock. Because outside of Moana, he doesn't have like a movie where it really showcases his range. Like how well he could really emote and all those kinds of things. And as an actor, he's been criticized on that side of him. So I want him to have his day in the sun. And honestly, I feel like this will be it. The costumes for Black Adam look amazing. I think The Rock has a lot of charisma, and that's going to really help with this character. But more importantly, this is a serious character. We're going to need to see like something that he hasn't really had, in my opinion, an opportunity to really showcase his talent with. So I'm really excited to see him just like hit it out of the park with Black Adam.
I'm glad you said that, because now thinking about it, yeah, almost all his roles, he's always been like, yeah, the, how people say, a himbo. Like, he's a big dude who'll be joking around. He'll have his moments where he's serious, but at the same time, it might be a joke or something like that. He's been in a lot of like comedic-ish action films and stuff like that. Exactly. And so, yeah, and Black Adam, yeah, in the comics, is a serious person. I never really seen him joke about anything. And he's playing him. So, yeah, I want to see that version of... I want to see a scary Rock. I want to see scary Dwayne The Rock Johnson, where I'm looking at him and not thinking like, oh, it's The Rock. I'll be like, oh, no, it's The Rock. Like, it's...
Yeah.
You know, everybody, you know, the initial thing, he does that whole brooding thing, but he's trying to show you that, oh, I'm not like that. It's just a facade. I'm really nice. Like, no, I want him to be like the way he treats Kevin Hart. The way he be talking so much shit to that man, they be doing anything, and he just be like, dude, hey, Kevin, can you, like, he be on him. If you watch the videos between those two, he be on him. I want that for Black Adam.
I like that. I feel like there's a lot of potential. There's a lot of potential there. And I don't know. I feel like we're in a great stage of just like pop culture projects in general, in terms of like comics, movies, anime. There's a lot to go through. I feel like the other big ones this summer is probably Thor: Love and Thunder. How did you guys feel after that second trailer?
Interesting. I'm a little excited. I'm a little excited to see Thor Jane Foster. I'm a little excited to see just what they do with this. I trust them. I'm optimistic for Thor Love and Thunder. At first I was like, eh, but after the second trailer I'm like, let's do this.
Let's give it a shot.
Yeah, let's give it a shot.
Definitely. I can't wait to see it, because I like the comic involving Jane becoming Thor, like that, because that whole comic people sleep on it, and there's a lot of like baggage and controversy behind it. Well, I say controversy loosely, because it was only a certain demographic who got upset about it. But overall, I can't wait to see what they're going to do, especially with Christian Bale's The God Butcher, Gore the God Butcher. But one thing I have a question on that I want to see is that we got that one picture of, you know, Valkyrie, Jane, and what people appear to be Bassett, you know, yeah. Bass, the Panther guy. And now it begs the question of, is that actually Bass, or is that someone, like you said in one of your videos, Jose, is that Bass's avatar? And if it's an avatar, I'm confused. Why does Bass have a different avatar than the Black Panther? Because you would think that logically, the Black Panther would be the avatar of Bass. And so why would the Panther guy pick somebody else? Granted, of course, like Emmy and that at the time, of course, with the past name Chadwick Boseman. But even still, it's just like it would make more sense that you could connect it that way better. But that's just me, unless you have an answer to that or a possible conclusion.
So the easiest answer to that, like it, within the MCU, not sure like the entire history of Black Panther in the comics, because like there's a lot of different origin stories, but at least in the MCU, the Black Panther as a character gets his power from drinking of the it's the root. The purple hearted fruit, that is what gives you the power of the Black Panther. It's kind of like an expression of Bast's power. So it's not, for example, Moon Knight, where like you literally become Moon Knight's avatar on Earth, like where you're working for a god. In this case, like at least from what we've seen, Bastet doesn't have total agency over T'Challa or whoever the Black Panther is. She just gives them her power to like become an agent for good. Make sense? Or like use it as they see fit. So in this case, T'Challa is not necessarily the avatar of the Black of Bastet. He is essentially just using he's a conduit is the word. He's a conduit to Bastet. He's not necessarily the emissary of Bastet. So if it's an avatar, it would make sense in a way that like the gods, at least from what we are being shown, need a way to go through a physical and mortal plane. But the counter argument that I would have for that is that Zeus seems to have his purest form. Like Zeus doesn't seem to be showing any signs of having an avatar holding his body, right? Unless we do see that in the movie. Because like I know that there's differences that they're trying to set up between, like, for example, the Norse gods, the Egyptian gods, and the Greek gods. But at least in the MCU, what I'm getting is that the Egyptian gods need an avatar. The Norse gods are essentially just aliens, like really powerful aliens that go to Earth. And then the Egyptian gods, the Greek gods are just, again, deities without any limitations. At least that's what we've seen, that based on the trailers. So it could be Bast's avatar. It could just be a random extra. I don't know. But I'm excited to see if I'm excited to find out.
Absolutely. I'm still excited. But I mean, overall, I can't wait to see what they do with Love and Thunder. And I like how they're combining, you know, like Thor the God Butcher with the Jane Foster comic. So yeah, I can't wait to see what they're gonna do and what's gonna lead after that. You know, post credit or what things that they might be possibly connecting to. So you never know.
I think they're gonna do, and you know, I hope there will, I'll be able to. I'm gonna get a right prediction on this. I think they're gonna do something with Loki.
Ooh, nice!
I think there's gonna be something with Loki.
Finally, I think that's the only one so far where Loki. Well, you can say as well, maybe Hawkeye as well, like where it's not connected back to the movies yet.
Right.
Oh, true.
Because yeah, pretty much, if you think about it, and which I guess some MCU fans have kind of made criticism or complained about, is that, you know, we were being told that Loki pretty much caused the multiverse to be here. Yep. But we don't really see any real actual action behind that.
Yeah.
And it just seems like pretty much like his cosmic decision hasn't really played a role into anything as much. And even in No Way Home, it was more of an isolated incident that, you know, Spider-Man and Doctor Strange thought like, oh yeah, that was because of our spell. That has nothing to do with what Loki did. It's just an isolated incident. Even in Multiverse of Madness, I wouldn't even say it's a spoiler, but they bring it up and it's just like, yeah, Doctor Strange already knew about the multiverse. But he never mentions like, yo, what's going on with the multiverse right now? Like, who did this? He's never asked that question in the movie. So it's just like, it feels like right now, I could be wrong in the future, but it feels like now, it's like Loki's decision has yet to have any real consequences yet, in my opinion.
Fair. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
But I think that's going to change. I feel like there's, especially because we're so early in phase four, I think we're going to start seeing the effects of Loki's decision with like the upcoming movies and shows. Speaking of, have you guys seen Ms. Marvel?
Yes, I've seen episode one and I like it. I don't know what everybody else is seeing. It's like, oh no, it's way too childish. It's like, it's a better produced Disney Channel show in the best way possible. It's a great coming of age story, at least to me, with a different side and different, like, so, a different aspect of a teenager's world that's not the same thing over and over again. Like, it's not the it's not the American story, or like, it's not the typical coming of age high school story. It's a Pakistani family. So, oh, what would a Pakistani superhero family look like? I love exploring new avenues of storytelling in this way, and I feel that Kamala Khan is actually really relatable.
Definitely. And I like how they are showing that part of the MCU, or at least part of that lore, about how do regular civilians, stuff like that, react to the Avengers, stuff like that. Or what about children and just teenagers? And as we can see in the episode, they absolutely freaking like love the Avengers. They have a whole Avengers con that they said they were doing in the So, and you saw everybody dressed up as certain people. We saw them, some dressed up as Hulk, some dressed up as Captain Marvel, some dressed up as one person even dressed up as a person as a tour guide for Wakanda, handing out passports. Like, hey, can you guys want to go to Wakanda and stuff like that? All that little stuff is cool. And some people are pointing out that it's even interesting is that the little scenes in the beginning when they're leading into the con, there was somebody who was dressed up as Loki. I'm just like, is there actual Loki fans in the MCU? Now I understand from us being Loki fans, but like in the actual MCU world, there are people out there who actually like Loki.
Yeah.
That's interesting to me.
Like stretch.
Which begs the question of like, they say they were Black Panther. Funny enough, would they bring up the fact that, hey, are there people who like Killmonger? Like, hey, I don't know what happened in Wakanda, but I feel like Killmonger got a point, like something like that, like somebody on the news. I know I'm happy that Wakanda opened up and all that, but I don't know, that Killmonger guy seemed like he had a good idea. Why didn't he go through it or something like that? Hey, I just like how they're opening up that perspective that we even make content about. We make jokes in little shorts and TikToks about, oh, what it would like to be like in the MCU as a civilian and or watching it and stuff like that. And they're kind of taking that angle, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. I feel like there would definitely be Killmonger fans because there were people I'm forgetting the Spider-Man movie, but there were people who were writing graffiti about Thanos being like, Thanos was right and stuff. So I'm sure. I'm sure those fans are out there.
Golly. Can you be like, yo, Thanos, can you be in there and be like, oh, Thanos is right? And can you imagine the arguments like, oh, so you think that was perfectly okay for my 10-year-old brother to disappear on me like that? Oh, I like how they're actually showing the consequences of the stuff that happens in there and how it not just reflects the heroes and affects the heroes, but also affects the everyday people. And I like how they're all connected and, you know, possibly lead to maybe possible villain stories. And they're like, oh, well, I was affected by this. Now here I am today because of your decision. Cap, Iron Man, insert random hero.
I agree with that. It's definitely something to look forward to the future. But hey, guys, do you guys have anything else you want to cover for this week?
No, not that I can think of.
Yep, same here.
Alrighty. Well, then let the people know where they can find you.
Sure. You can find me, Travis the Sibling, on IG and on TikTok.
Awesome. How about you, Mizu?
You guys can find me on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook, all Mizu Shogun. And another quick shout out. Last time on the pod, I talked about how you guys got me to 8,000 followers on Instagram. Now y'all got me to 9,500. Almost there, because my goal is 10K. And about to hit that. We're killing it over here on Instagram. I never thought so, because I'm not gonna lie, when I first tried to get on Instagram, I was like, this is hopeless. This is not gonna work. I'll try, but this market is hard. And it's been paying off. And I appreciate all of you for that.
You're a real G, man. You deserve it, bro. All the best luck to you. Hey, the Weave Weekly stands are gonna help you out there, bro.
You got it. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I believe in them.
All right, everybody. And then, yeah, my Instagram is at I'm Tropical Joe. Same thing as the TikTok. And then you can find me on YouTube. I have two channels, Tropical Joe Gaming and Tropical Joe, the main channel. So if you guys want to see us, you can also subscribe to our Weeb Weekly YouTube channel. Also, remember to download the podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever you try to consume your pods. We will be here, and we'll be putting up some nice little clips on the TikTok, on the Instagram, and on the YouTube later on. But as always, just crack a smile, and we'll see you on the next one.
Yes, sir.